everyone. Welcome back to the VF Existential Crisis Podcast. Today, we are going to talk about something a bit more personal, and that is how we are dealing with job instability, we'll call it, employment instability, whether that means not working, being unemployed, being semi-employed, being employed but worried about not being employed. All of those permutations is kind of what we're talking about today, because I think having lived all of those experiences in the last little while, they're all kind of important. So Graham, you're semi-employed at the moment.
Yes. Actually, it's funny because, you know, I started my own consultancy, which is great, and it's been going well. But it's a different kettle of fish than working for someone. You definitely only eat what you kill, and so there's always the challenge of finding that next thing. I've had some real success. I've got a really good mentor who named Chris Viano, who's actually a longtime friend. We grew up in Montreal together in the same kindergarten. We both ended up in visual effects, which is pretty weird.
Yes.
And he started a consultancy years ago. And when I was complaining about a job, he's like, why are you working a job? You should consult. And so he's helped me get a couple of my first gigs. And, you know, the thing about it is I've had to learn a lot. Like I learned how to build my own website. I learned how to do my own bookkeeping and accounting, and how to issue invoices, and like all these sort of really mundane things, which are really the foundation of taking off. And now things are starting to roll, but like not all clients are created equal. So we'll get into that a little bit later.
Yeah, it was interesting because when we were talking, you were expressing like, oh, you know, I had to set this up and I had to set this up. I come from a family of people who have always had their own business. My mother had her own business. My father had his own business. And like I had to learn how to do my taxes at 18. And all that kind of stuff. And I had my own businesses. I was selling t-shirts in high school and all kind of stuff. I mean, and then official business. And I started working in freelance. So it was kind of like one of those moments where I've taken for granted that I have that knowledge.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you ask me?
Yeah. My family's the opposite. Like, we come from a family of employees, if you will. But like, you know, executive level in some cases, and you know, that's all fine and dandy. But like, aside from my stepdad, who is an entrepreneur, you know, we got a pretty regular middle-class existence. And, you know, my mom's a pretty conservative person, small C conservative. And she's like, you know, just get a job. And you know, I think it's every boomer mom's desire that their child has a smooth, painless life. And, you know, that's my mom's view, is if you just had a job, like a regular person, you know, everything would be okay. But like my, I don't know, departure from the norm started a long time ago. Like I went to law school. Like the story is I really wanted to go into film. Like that was my goal. And then in my second year of university, my dad passed away. And so my mom on her own was like panicking, like you're never going to make a life in the film industry. And so I ended up going to law school because that was supposed to be the, you know, the safe bet. And I liked school. I liked law school. It was great. But like, I'm not a lawyer. I probably should have got into criminal law. I think I probably would have been good at that. But like staring at pages, it's just not my thing, you know? And so I went to film school after law school, and I'm going to date myself now, but I did a year of articling in a Toronto firm, and then 9/11 happened. And so I was literally in the office when the planes hit the Trade Center, and all work stopped for the day. And it was kind of an unsettling time, but I happened to be in the aircraft financing wing of the business. So as you can imagine, there were cutbacks, of which I was one. And
wow.
Yeah, it was pretty rad time, but you know, they treated me well. I used my severance to go to film school, and then I've been kind of working my way into the film business, ironically, over the course of my career, and finally got there and attained some level of success. And then it all evaporated before my eyes. So it's so funny because I literally had a strategy on like how each job was going to bring me closer to film. And then now I'm like, how the hell do I get out?
It's funny because I had almost the exact opposite. We've never talked about this, but
that's interesting.
When I was in like grade 10 careers or whatever, my plan was to be a lawyer in the army.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I had no idea if that's actually a possibility, but I was going to go to Kingston because they were going to pay for my college. And then in grade 11, I took a photography class. And then I was like, I'm not doing that. And then I ended up I was lucky. Our high school had not so much film, but they had a lot of photography stuff. And we had like silk screen and printing press. It was fairly new at the time. And so I got really into that and then ended up getting into film school or media school or whatever and going into that. And now I'm thinking, I should have done something with accreditation because
there's no shortage of military options right now, too, as you might have heard.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you mentioned that because I have actually looked into it. But yeah, so that's funny that we sort of took the opposite journey a little bit.
Yeah, it's so funny. It's why we get along because we're a little yin and yangy, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
We're not the only people talking about this. I'm a perennial browser of Reddit. And there were a couple of threads today that I noticed that were kind of in line with what we're talking about. One gentleman or lady was, a comp lead and was working, making a decent living. And now they're cleaning aircraft parts or helicopter parts. And I'm like, that's the outcome for some people, and there was another one sort of lamenting their lifestyle change that they've had to go through. And it's, I think it's true. Like for me, it kind of became this sort of like holistic self-evaluation. Like what is life? I know it sounds really hokey and stuff, but it's true. Like I had, a really well-paying job. I hesitate to say I was happy. I think maybe nostalgic wise, it sounds, but I remember being stressed all the time. Like, delivering VFX shows, they make it feel like you're curing cancer and there's always a shot that's wrong. There's always, and I was running a studio, so never mind one project, I might have six or eight, and there's always a problem somewhere along the line. So I kind of never got a break. So while I liked the pace my personality is such that I like a challenge and we'll jump on a grenade, like at some point your adrenaline runs out, you just kind of run on vapor. And I feel like a lot of my career, when I look back, I think I was running on vapor. That makes any sense. So stepping out of that and like a lot of people, I kind of personified my job, or my job personified me. Like I was an entertainment executive. I was a studio manager. Like,
very North American thing too. Like
totally. It became part of my identity. Right. And so when that kind of went away, and all the trappings with it, and like, it's funny, the trappings were like, people who used to kiss up to me because I would sign checks, stop calling, and used to get trips to SIGGRAPH by vendors and stuff like that, and I had to pay for myself. Like,
it's a sexy business, and it has, like, when you go to parties, the classic examples. My wife is a occupational therapist in spinal cord injury, and so when people ask Carrie what they do, she tells them. And then she knows the inevitable response is, okay, cool. Yeah, that's amazing. Like, oh my God. And then Chris, what do you do? Oh, I work in movies. Oh, thank God.
Yeah.
Because everyone can talk about movies to some level. It's pretty accessible. But yeah, so it's definitely, there's definitely like a loss of, purpose, identity, those are all things I think a lot of people are dealing with. But I think it's like, I think it depends when you got in. So,
true. Yeah.
Because my experience is similar. And like, if I'm honest, I'm like, I feel the same way. It's like, again, in North America in particular, it's like when people ask you, what are you about? You usually tell them your job.
Yeah.
In Europe and stuff, it's maybe different from what I've experienced. But for here, for sure, it's like, oh, I'm a VFX supervisor, or oh, I'm a producer. Or for me, I have to go, well, I'm kind of a producer and a VFX supervisor, and I work in animation, and so it's a long, it's a bit of a paragraph. But yeah. Regardless, it's kind of what you do. But I think, like, when I started, there wasn't a guarantee of a job at all.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
I just assumed that I would have to work other jobs to stay in it. And you're really just trying to get an opportunity. And, you know, a lot of people in production, if they're of a certain age, particularly women that I've worked with, started as reception and worked their way up from there. Other people got in as runners or PAs and worked their way up from there. and then so, like, when I got my first job, I thought, I don't know, this could probably end at any minute. And I remember, because I was reflecting on this, because we were going to talk about this, I remember thinking, like, I always kind of had a plan B for a while. Not a real plan B, but enough mentally that it's like, well, I won't die. You know, I won't be poor. So at one point, I remember a lot of that at the time, just because of the age, was like school options. So I remember at my first real sound job, I also got into a post-grad film program, which was kind of like, I didn't really need it, but it was much more technically focused, and it would have been a good like resume reel builder. But at the time it was like, well, you can pay for school, or you can come work for me for nothing really, and probably get more out of that for free. At least you're not getting paid, but at least you're not paying money. You're not collecting debt, and you know, if it doesn't work in 3 months, you could reapply. So that was my option. And then when I came out of that, it was, you know, after that kind of went up and down, there was another moment of like, okay, what am I doing? And then I ended up being unemployed for a while. And I was in my 20s at this point. So it's kind of like, you know, it's not the worst thing. You can survive. I wasn't surviving on much anyways. And then, you know, you're like, okay, well, I'll take the job at The Wild. I ended up in production management. And so I kind of, that's one of the reasons why I bounced around from sound to production to animation to VFX, is because the industry was not stable and there wasn't like 20 places hiring 100 people.
Mm-hmm.
So basically you took the opportunity you had. And I almost, at the VFX point, I had two job opportunities. One was with an animation company doing sound work, and the other one was VFX. It's at that point, not even that job, but after that job, where the industry started to stabilize more and grew, particularly in Toronto, but I'd say in general. And then only about like maybe 5 years into rocket science did I feel like, oh, this is a job that's longer term now. Up until that point, I was just always, I think it helped in a way that when I started in sound, everybody I worked with, you weren't talking 3 weeks, you weren't talking 6 months, you were talking like 2 weeks, 1 week, 1 day jobs.
Yeah.
Like those guys were hustling for day to day jobs. And then that made me think, ooh, I don't want to do this. I'd rather have a job, you know, that at least had the illusion of safety.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, it is the illusion of safety, because, like, you know, especially in this market where, like, you see it across other industries, not just visual effects, but, like, people are cutting costs and, you know, who are expensive? Older employees, generally, and executives. And so there's a lot of that going on, right? And so you think you're safe, but then all it takes is a downturn or a shift, and suddenly you're vulnerable. And it's one of, you know, entrepreneurs, and look, I want to be very careful. Like, there's a sort of fine line between, in my opinion, between entrepreneurship and like the sort of side hustle game that you see on TikTok and elsewhere. Like, I'm not doing a get rich quick theme. It's like, you know, I have real clients, I'm building a real business. But there's this sort of fetishization about being an entrepreneur. That I think people need to be aware that, like, it's not easy either. Like, it's you have more control, certainly. But I traded one boss for seven bosses, and not all of them are wonderful. And, you know, I'm not always in a position to say, get off my roster, because I still need that that revenue for now. My goal is, in a couple of years, I get to be a bit more picky. But
I found it challenging at the beginning. Like, and I wasn't really in, I wasn't really working for, actually, to be fair, I wasn't working for anything at the very beginning of my career. It was more for experience. But I was part to sort of help deal with that. Anytime we had, there was like a night gig or a side gig, like, or a cash gig, don't tell the government. They would, my boss at the time would give it to me. Like, he could have taken it, but I think at that point he was a little older and was kind of like trying to sort of like professionalize, I guess, like,
sure,
get a little bit out of that hustle game. Mm-hmm. But everyone I worked with was freelance. So like the audio, the Foley guy, like if he booked a gig, it was like a week of work. And then he was already looking while he was doing that, he's looking for his next week of work. And he was also a musician, like a orchestral percussionist. So he had two kind of side hustles, not side hustles, but two hustles going. And so, you know, it's like it's like people who have like combination jobs, like,
I'm in the combination job zone for sure.
Yeah. Or I'm like a teacher, but I do something in the summer, or like, anyways. So I found that like very eye opening. I was like, oh my God, this is, not only do you have to get good at what you're doing, you have to get good at all the stuff.
Yeah.
And this is like one of the pitches of the AI stuff is like, well, you don't have to do all that other stuff. You don't have to do all.
Well, you have to do it, but it facilitates it. That's,
yes,
that's,
makes it easier. So,
like,
so that's kind of interesting from the AI perspective, is maybe that opens up some of the stuff. And, you know, like just dealing with artists and vendors and things like that in freelance.
I miss that stuff. So that was the highlight. Like, one thing that I became acutely aware of over the final years, I'll call them my final years of visual effects, but, you know, I expected, I'm still in it to some extent. I expect to be back at some point, some capacity. But let's call it the last years. The work from home is actually disagreeable to me. And like, I value the flexibility. I think it's insane that we would make people commute for all their jobs. But at a personal level, I miss people, and I'm an introvert. But like, I think with between COVID and then a remote work, I probably spent 4 years working from home. That literally means me by myself in my room, and like a mental health standpoint, it was not great. Like, I like having people around and doing things. Of course, then that imposes on others, you know. And by the way, for those of you who are going to be critical, I was like a pioneer in the work from home thing. It's in a site. We were the first to commit to it long term. I think they still have it going on. So I prefer the flexibility. But again, just at a personal level, I miss seeing people. So that's something that I'm happy to be going to. I currently have a client who has me go into the office and help, and it's actually pretty rewarding for that side of it anyway.
Yeah, I don't know that I have mixed feelings about that. I've been working from home now longer, and I think I'm going to have a hard time going back, because the commute is like ridiculous, and the ability to access my family has like been like game changer. It used to be like I'd do the morning drop off and I wouldn't see the kids before they're asleep. Now they're much older.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I still have like kids. My son plays soccer and he needs to be driven around everywhere. So like, that would be such a burden on my wife. It would be ridiculous. And, you know, adding an extra, because Toronto traffic is horrible.
Yeah, especially now. With
all it has actually influenced my recent hiring decisions or recent employment decisions. Like, and it's just such a maybe stupid thing, but you know, an extra.
But I don't think it is stupid. I think there's also a dollar figure attached, right? Like, not only your time for the commute, but gas, and you know, I have to bring your lunch, and you know, one thing getting back to your point about missing the fam, like. I spent so many years in Montreal where I would often fly out on a Monday and fly back on a Friday. And if there's a project, I might stay longer. I missed a lot of my kids growing up. And it, like, now that I'm home with them, like, I didn't appreciate what I was missing at the time. But now that I'm with them, I'm like, man, I gave up a lot, you know? And it sounds very glamorous. Like, you know, they flew me around. And like, just the thought of that expense these days, like, just no one would ever do that anymore. That was like a blip in time. And getting back to your point about when you join the industry having an impact on your view, like, I joined in 2015, so like it was pretty much a steady climb from then till the strikes. Like, you know, we had the pandemic in between where everything kind of went down, but then it was like a super spike. So I'm kind of amongst that group that never knew fear, that it was like a constant flood of work. So yeah, this is definitely an eye opener.
Yeah, if you talk to anyone who was in kind of before that, it's kind of like, oh yeah, I remember these ups and downs where I was. Yeah. Unemployed, and usually they are not always, but usually they're better prepared. And so that's something, actually, maybe it's a good segue into kind of like what we could talk about. I have a process that I've gone through, and because I've been, I guess I was trying to figure out how many times I've been unemployed. I think it's like four since I got my first industry related jobs. Sound to hear. So the first time was, it was kind of in a state where it was like the business had changed, and my boss at the time had shifted, and the sound business had kind of fallen apart, so I had to look for something else. But I had built up some experience doing post-production and things like that, so that was interesting. It took me a while, but I was like 20 something and we were living like students anyways. I had not made a lot of money in that job. It was effectively like the equivalent of a part-time job. I had done it for experience. I had not made tons of cash, so I was not missing much. Then the first, like, sort of, I'd say, like, more professional salary was when I got the job on the Wild, which I only thought was going to be 6 months. So this is another example. It was only supposed to be a 6 month contract. It ended up being 2 years. And I was so and one of the things they did there is they said, well, if you leave early, you don't get the credit, which, fair enough. So, but then it's kind of like, wait a second, this is going on long. So for me, that was fine. But I was so concerned about that credit at that point, because that meant more than the money. And that was, I think, it's still important, but at that time it was really important because you didn't know.
That's your currency when you're in this business.
You just didn't know where the credits were going to come.
Yeah.
Right. And my credits up to that point were like, you know, you can still hear radio commercials that I recorded sometimes, which is funny, but yeah, so, but after that, I did feel a little bit more like, oh, I had started to make some money, and so you felt it a bit more. I'm trying to think, but I still was kind of in that, like, young, I could get away with murder, and it's after. So then I worked in visual effects. Then I got a job in visual effects, and then I worked for 3 years. And at that point, it started to get serious. I was starting to, my pay was going up. My responsibilities were going up. Some would say too much, but, and then I bought a house. I had a child.
Yep.
And then I lost my job. Wow. And that was interesting, but we had, because we, my wife and I, my wife also started late in her career. We had always approached financial things as if they were going to always go wrong, because we had both been, Carrie had been in school a lot and I had been in like in crazy jobs and had no long-term prospects. What a catch I was.
Yeah. But it's funny, cause, I was the opposite. If I had a dollar, I spent it. It's coming back to haunt me as I would love to retire right now. But, we are going to do a podcast about financial responsibility, and we're not going to give you financial advice, but we are going to tell you, Chris is going to tell you, and I'm going to comment on how to be solvent at the end of your career.
because this is going to be a good, like, segue. This podcast will be a good segue into that one, because I find myself when I'm talking to, particularly to production people who are asking me for advice, inevitably it always comes down to what are you doing with your money. And so it's a weird trend that I've seen, and I think maybe that conversation could help. And like, you know,
there's still an industry, it still exists, there are people that are still in it, but they perhaps more than ever before need to be aware of the potential ups and downs on the horizon. Like, I think we talked about this briefly offline, but like when I started at Mr. X, and shout out to Mr. X for the hat, but we did, I think, 24 episodes of Vikings per season, and we were starting the next season before the current season was even done. Like, that kind of stability helped Dennis build that company, and it was fantastic. And I just, now we're down to 8 to 10 episodes potentially for a series, and it's a select series, and then maybe there's a year and a half in between. Like, you just don't get that stability anymore. It is really hit or miss.
Well, I'll come back to my point, but I manage resources for studios from, you know, for, I don't know, most of my career. And my window started 6 months, 3 months, 6 months, and then it usually dropped off a cliff. And then there was a point, kind of probably around when you entered the industry, where it was like, oh, actually, it looks like it could be a year.
Yeah.
Beyond a year, you can't plan too much. That was one of Rocket Science's things, like compared to other places who only did films, which I think is probably a bad idea. If you did television series, at least give you the prospect of another season, right? So you could plan out a year, and then you're kind of like hoping it gets renewed and you carry on. And that's what's kept a lot of those places open, frankly.
Yeah, when I joined the industry, it was year contracts. Like, that was kind of the default by then. So, obviously the beginning of the golden age. It's driven by competition, obviously. You want to make sure that you have a team to do all the work that's coming. And so, you know, the company itself wants its stability and grabs as many people as they can and locks them down. So it's good for the company, it's good for people, and that's the stability we're missing right now, is that steady stream of work that justifies that kind of commitment.
So going back to that period when I was unemployed, it wasn't expected, and my wife had a top up on her maternity leave, and it was ending right at the point when I lost my job. It was a fixer upper house, which, you know, I had started to make money and had been doing renovations and all that kind of stuff. And we were we're getting close to the point where we have to put our daughter into daycare to secure a daycare spot, because Carrie can't go back to work, which at the time, if you live in Ontario, you would know, it's the cost is like the same, because I looked it up, it's the same as sending your kid to law school. It was the same cost to send under 18 months or whatever, right?
I remember we were paying more for our two kids in daycare than we did for our mortgage when that was
a thing. Oh, 100%. 100%. So it was like an insane pressure point.
Yeah.
But we had done something that was good, and that we had planned our mortgage payments as if one person was working. Now, at the time, it wasn't one full person that was working, so there was a bit of pressure to get that stuff, but it meant we had to cut down everything. And having been pretty poor recently helped because we could just cut everything down. Right. And then eventually, and then I had, and then I took another job. I took less money because I was always in, again, in this situation where it's like, there's no obvious next step. You have to get a job and then, you know, you get the job. So I took a step back to take a step forward. In the end, that turned out to be an amazing choice because I was at that company for 13 years by, you know, their ability, my ability, and luck of the industry. But, and then, you know, more recently with like DNEG, you know, with the strikes and all that kind of stuff, I'm not a optimistic planner. So as soon as I see signs, and I've seen signs of like, when I worked in sound, the place we used to work at a lot went out of business. And I remember I had to like take a dolly over before the people came and took all my boss's equipment. Like there was all kinds of wild. So you see, and if you worked with people who have been part of like, I mean, I remember I worked with guys who worked at Gedecky and that place went under, and then, you know, or Meteor, like places that went under in spectacular fashion and people didn't get paid. You start to see the signs. And, you know, so like you start to see, there's a writer strike. It's like, I wonder what could happen. Maybe this will all be fine, but I'm not planning my existence on it.
Yeah.
So this has kind of been my approach. So when I got to the point of, you know, of that, you're kind of prepared. And the same thing happened with this last one. So this is something we can kind of talk about in another episode, but I think regardless, like, you know, I kind of tried to write out, this is my general approach, and I don't want to sugarcoat it. There's also like dark days in there because as we talked about earlier, it goes right to the core of your identity. And why did they pick me over you? Now I've been in the position and you've been in the position where you've had to pick one or the other person. And it's not always, you know, it's not easy and it's not always obvious. Yeah.
And there's also often injustice too, right? Like,
yeah. Sometimes
the complexion of work lets you keep a certain number of people. And, you know, even though there's lots of need, it's like, you know, as a corporate manager, you don't get to choose those sometimes. You know, it's tough.
Yeah, it comes down to, you know, it depends what you're being asked to do as well and all these kind of things.
Yeah.
So the first thing that I try to let myself do, which I'm bad at, is just to be like, you know, to let yourself grieve the job.
Yep.
And be like, fuck it. Okay, I deserve to be angry, sad, whatever, pissed off. I'm very competitive. So I was like, fucking why did they pick that guy or me? Fuck you, you assholes. You know, even though I don't have any bad feelings to those people at all because I understand the situation. So you got to let yourself do that. That's, I think, important. And it's not like a day. The other thing, what I find helpful in that moment is to like sprint. And that is, to me, that's like, you know, you're in your kind of like getting, so get your resume, do the things you can control, get your resume up to date, get your LinkedIn profile, get all that stuff happening. If you know of people who are hiring right now, get in front of those people right now, because there's something about still working that makes it more attractive to hire.
And your network is your best lever to get contacts, for sure.
So you fire out the most obvious things first. And then to me, the first thing I do after that is, where am I, get my money right. Now, if you've never done that before, that's a big process and it's kind of daunting. If you've done it before, it's more of an update. Okay, when's the last time you did this? Was it 2 months ago or a year ago or 2 years ago? Where am I at? Because to me, I think what I always want to do, what makes me feel better, is to know how long I can last without a job. And when I first started doing this, it wasn't very long.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And we used to do a thing. My wife would do hers on a napkin, and I did mine in a spreadsheet. So go figure. But it was like, okay, basic stuff. Like, what do I have to pay for? Like food, rent, whatever. And then what's like next level stuff? Like, and then what's like stupid, right?
Yeah.
I don't even usually look at like what I'm spending and like that kind of stuff. I just look at must-haves. Like I would say, for example, like, you know, if you want to keep working in the industry and you might be doing stuff from home, you need internet. So to me, that's not a must-have. It's not like I'm going to die if I don't have it, but it's next on the list kind of thing. Whereas maybe like Amazon Prime or Netflix is maybe third on the list. And so what I always do is go, okay, well, I have this much money in the bank. I have this much money coming for a while. Have you signed up for employment insurance in Ontario? Because if you haven't, you should do that right away. And then you're probably going to get a small amount of money, but it's something. And it'll tell you how long you're going to get it for. And then you can figure out, okay, my money will run out in a month, 3 months, hopefully a year, you know? And that to me reframes the whole scenario.
Sure.
It could be any of the feels. It could be like, oh my God, I'm screwed. And then, but frankly, that's good to know, because that means then you maybe need to cast the net out better and do something more drastic. Or if it's like, well, I can last a year, okay, then it's not that you want to spend all of the money you've saved over time or whatever, but at least you know I can do it if I need to. And that immediately makes me feel better. When the pandemic hit, I did that immediately.
Yeah.
Like that night, like people were like, oh, it's not going to be fine. And I'm like, and because my wife works in healthcare.
You knew it wasn't fine.
It wasn't fine. And so I remember going home, and I was in this kind of like, I've had these like moments where my kids were born and I'm like in a some project stuff where I'm just like in a math mode and I'm just like, you know, figuring it out. And I'm like, okay, I can last a year. And then I'm like, okay, I don't care what happens now. So now everything else is gravy. Now, like I said, at the beginning of that process, when I started doing that, it was like, ooh, it was like, okay, we have enough for 2 months. What I found is by going through that process, it motivates you to, look at what you're spending money on.
Yeah.
And if you're in a position where companies make this mistake and people make this mistake, you should not be planning optimistically. It doesn't mean you need to be like depressed or like down on yourself, but I'm telling you, it is so much better to be aggressive.
Surprised pleasantly than surprised unpleasantly.
100%. This is how I plan every project.
Yeah.
Like I plan a project, I look at what could go wrong, and I shore it up in that area. And then I assume things are going to go wrong. And when they don't, you know, it's like, cool, amazing. Yeah. That just means we have even more, and I'm further ahead of the game. So anyway, so getting your money right in whatever way you want to do that, I think is super important, and like being objective. And so this is the next thing I think is important is, what kind of person are you? I am a planner person. I need a certain amount of structure, but I'm not a micromanager, psycho librarian planner.
Right, right.
Like
I'm the jump on the grenade.
Yeah.
Deal with the chaos, take it as it comes type for sure.
If I make a framework that I believe is true, I can then operate within that without stress. A lot of people have to micromanage the expenditure. Like, I don't do that at all. If I know, I'm fine. I'm like, and it's the same way I manage projects as well. It's like, once the box is built and I know it's good, then I can maneuver inside that. I trust myself to do that. And you know, that's how my wife and I planned our finances. Like, okay, this is taken care of, then you're good. Then everything else is like,
yeah,
you don't have to spend so much.
Yeah, I think we've touched on it, each of us separately, but it's important. Like, we each have spouses that are pretty rock solid. Like, my wife's a teacher, Chris's wife's in healthcare. So they both have largely stable jobs, which is perhaps allowed. Well, still, I'll speak for myself. Like, Michaela's teaching job has given me the freedom to be a bit ambitious and swing for the fences. And mostly it's worked out. And then when it doesn't, we still have, you know, her wicked pension to fall back on. I feel for people who don't have a spouse or a partner with a stable job to sort of offset the crazy up and down, or even worse. I know some couples of VFX couples where both of their incomes took a hit at the same time. Like,
yeah,
it's super challenging when you're kind of both in the environment, and then the environment kind of erodes, right?
Yeah. So, well, I don't want to give too much away on our next podcast, because that's like one of my number ones, find the right partner. But but regardless, you know, like when I started in the business, Carrie was in school, so it wasn't always stable.
Right.
In fact, she was a financial drain at that point, and I was barely.
You were the rock star.
And then we had moments where we've both been financial drains on each other, so sure. It seems fair. But anyway, so regardless of how you do it, you need to have a good understanding of what you're spending money on. And this can go for like, okay, I've just been unemployed, or I might be unemployed. In fact, I would suggest, if you think you might be employed, this is the time to do it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The sooner you can plan, the better your outcome, for sure.
Yeah. And so that when, you know, when it hits, like, it sucks enough to lose your job, but if you're also freaking out about your entire life at the same time,
yeah,
that's pretty rough. And you're always in a if you're calm and you understand what you're all about, then you're in a much better position to like negotiate severances and apply for EI and look for jobs. You're not like in a psychotic state.
Yeah.
You won't hit, you don't go quite as dark that week, you know, that kind of thing. So getting your money right, super important. And then I think there's like, you know, again, you have to sort of understand who you are. Like, are you a planner? Are you not a planner? Are you someone who is like going to take it really hard? Mm-hmm. You know, like, you talk about this in financial stuff, but I think understanding your like your own psychology as well is important.
Your risk tolerance.
Yeah. And how what's your best way to cope? Right. So you need to kind of like, it's a good time for self-reflection without sort of, you know, self-flagellation.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's interesting you say that, because like, kind of ties back to what we're talking about at the beginning. Like, the outcome of my self-reflection is like, I realized I didn't need half the shit that I was like, had. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I didn't need the shopping and I do need Warhammer 40K. That's like my hobby. But I've vastly cut down my toxic pile of gray. But
I bought my FIFA tickets while I was working, knowing I could.
Yeah, possibly. We both have our vices, and you know, I think it's partly age and wisdom, like all the kind of hokey crap that people, and also too, like, my kids are getting out now. Like, my son is working, and my daughter is in, I think, the second to last year of her secondary school, but her college, whatever. So like, they're almost off the payroll. And so the pressure is decreasing for us, for sure. So it's like a little bit easier to manage. But I would settle for a simple day with my family than, you know, a glamorous trip. And that's something that I never could have said 10 years ago. I love those sort of ego plays. And I was never a big Instagrammer guy, but I could have been, like, if I was 10 years younger, posting on the beach and shit like that. Like, yeah,
Well,
we did it up when we went on vacation, and probably to a ridiculous extent. So,
well, that's kind of like, to me, like, having been unemployed like four times, I've had to go through some version of that. and it's different every time. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of like, you know, and anyone who's been in any kind of crisis or has had like a loss that's significant, you reflect on like what actually matters. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is assuming you can feed and house yourself, of course. If you are in dire straits, then you have a different problem.
Yeah, Maslow's hierarchy of
100%. Needs. You know,
you, like, need, you need the bottom first before you get to the enlightenment or whatever it is.
The top. And like that's, you need to take care of that first, obviously. But then it's like, okay. So to me, so self-reflecting who you are, what you want to do is important because it sets you up. It opens yourself up. So there's a concept called like loss aversion, which is you can use it in negotiations and stuff like that. But the simple idea is that losing something is harder than you get more. You get less value out of gaining something than the feeling of loss when you lose something.
Right.
So if you lost your job or you think you're going to lose your job, it's going to feel worse than if you got another job that's exactly the same. Like, you know, you think about it like a raise. I got a raise. Within 2 weeks, it's like, where's my next one? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where if I took $100 a week from you, you'd be pretty upset about it.
Yeah.
So you've lost something, but you have to be careful about that setting up your whole worldview going forward, because it's going to make the struggle really hard. Someone once told me, like, when Dina was like, oh, you should hold out for a job and you know, you're really good at it. And it was meant to be a compliment.
Yeah.
But it was a weird, like, you're a VFX supervisor, producer compliment. But anyways, it was still a compliment. And I was kind of like, that came from a person who was very, very specific about what they wanted to do, and was mobile, could move anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
And I'm like, bro, that doesn't apply to me. I got kids.
Yeah.
And if I have to take a job and it's the janitor job and it feeds the kids, that's my job. That is my main responsibility. So it was like an interesting like view of, if you're only into your own career, and there's a lot of people that are, and you know, that's fine, and it's all about moving your career forward, then that was a useful piece of advice.
Yeah.
But my career is not the top thing on my list. Do you know what I mean? So this is
you got other constraints. Yeah.
So
like I'm done traveling. Like wherever I work, I want my family with me. And getting back to Michaela being a teacher, like she's got 4 years to retirement, so we're not going anywhere until she retires. So for 4 years, my geography is constrained to Southern Ontario, kind of where I can drive at any moment.
Yeah, but if you were you know,
I was 26, I'd be in Australia where the tax credit's amazing and
Or if your job was your number one thing, like, and there's people like our age that are like that. They, you know,
I would say it was my number one thing when I was traveling to Montreal. I think that was an age thing. Like I wouldn't do that today, but I did it then. And I was happy to do it, you know, and then I enjoy all the perks. But
I mean, I've decided to stay in Toronto and that's held me back over the years.
Sure.
And I've, you know,
but yeah, Toronto's got a very specific VFX makeup. It's mostly TV.
It's not even Toronto. It's like wherever the wind was blowing. Like a lot of people move to Toronto, from Toronto, back to Toronto. It's you go where the wind is blowing. But if you don't want to do that, then you've got to either be prepared to work less or be prepared to be flexible. So
I think it's worth actually talking about the job market, because like there's still an overcapacity of visual effects availability in the world. That's why people are still fighting over prices. So it's why there's not a lot of hiring still. Prices are still low for bids. So we do see a lot of people migrating out of visual effects. And so not only is the sort of visual effects market shaky, but so is tech and so is gaming and so are these adjacent industries that have usually been able to absorb exodus from visual effects. So it feels a lot more constraining now than I think at any point that I'm familiar with anyway. I know people, you know, marketing suffers when the economy is bad, although I hear commercials are still doing okay, which is kind of awesome. But I think it's tough to find an analogous job. So we end up talking about people completely getting out, doing something vastly different. And I think that's just a necessity sometimes. And I think there's a whole strategy around coming to terms with that, like grieving your career in a lot of ways. People who have gone to school for visual effects maybe started, maybe didn't. And now there's really no prospect of them entering the business even.
Yeah.
There's a lot of victims to this shift, which is pretty disappointing.
Yeah. I mean, life is a risk. And I feel like too, like when you see people like, well, I took a job as doing this, and they're kind of like ashamed. I'm like, ashamed of what? Like,
yeah, I know that's our generation, that we were brought up that way. Like,
it's people like younger you said, too, though. Like,
get the janitor job and do whatever you need to pay the bills. And like, that's actually a source of pride for, or should be.
I feel like having children reframes that for you. Like,
yeah,
I would feel differently, but I'm like, I don't care as long as, again, you have to look at your own self-assessment and your financial scenario.
Yeah.
And if you can hold out and you're okay, or you have a partner who can share the load for a while, that's fine. If not, like, I don't understand how people can hang around. Like, when I see sometimes on like LinkedIn, it's like, I haven't worked in 2 years, and I'm thinking,
yeah, I know.
What are you doing? Get out.
I have to say, like, those people, it's reality check time. Like, it's disappointing, but if you've been sitting on the sidelines for 2 years, there's people that haven't been, and you know, the upswing that's going to suck up the next volume of people, it's not happening for a while. So like,
In my mind, it's like 6 months, and this is coming from you. I don't know if you're an artist, there's obviously supply and demand, but when you're hiring artists, it's like you're hiring 5 people or 10 people or 30 people or whatever, maybe 2, whatever. When you're hiring a producer or a VFX supervisor, you're hiring 1.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, in a studio that's 100 people, there's no new producer job or VFX supervisor job unless someone quits.
Yep.
Or there's some kind of massive new project that they can't handle.
Yeah. Same with studio heads. It's even more rare. It's like one studio head per studio, right?
Exactly.
And I find it kind of ironic because, like, you know, depending on your skill set in the pipeline, your menu of like related jobs is pretty narrow, or could be pretty narrow. Like, I think matte painting, you have probably some versatility, graphic design and concept, or even I know of some pure artists who do matte painting on the side. Essentially, it pays the bills while they do their art. Compositing, maybe that's a bit more challenging. Perhaps the 3D stuff, if you can get into.
But compositors, everybody needs compositors. That's the good news from in visual effects, at least.
Yeah, it's the good news in visual effects. But like, if you had to leave, if you're forced to leave, like the transfer. So I mean, on paper, I have wicked transferable skills. I ran a business, X number of millions of dollars, ran IT, HR, finance. But you get pigeonholed, I think, a bit. And like, it doesn't help.
For sure.
First of all, the economy at large is bad. But you get, you know, you're a visual effects person. It's not a common enough industry that people can accept or understand what you did. And so it didn't matter that I was negotiating million-dollar contracts with some of the most ruthless people on the planet, that I built teams of hundreds of people that were successful and positive. I didn't make widgets. I didn't make the widget they were making. And there's a sort of hyper-focus, in my opinion, on specialization. Or at least there has been in the last decade. I do feel it's changing now.
Well, we are guilty of it too. So
yeah. Oh no, I'm just saying that. Like,
I always found it interesting that you can't, you know, VFX people can't see past to hire animation people and vice versa.
Oh yeah, yeah, no, for sure.
I fought that on both sides, and I'm like, what are you talking about, you fools? Like,
yeah, it's crazy.
Like, yes, but, it might be a bit of an adjustment, but like,
yeah,
that guy or that woman has talent. Like, so what's the difference?
I also feel my age is catching up to me. I'm in my 50s now, and it's like, you know, I've been watching YouTube and there's all these channels about, like, you know, jobs after 50 are just harder to come by. And it makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, typically people in their 50s are at the executive level. They're very expensive, or the perception is that they can't learn because they're not tech savvy, which is the opposite. I'm actually digging into this AI stuff pretty aggressively. Yeah. But like, yeah, it's definitely a key feature in why I went out on my own. I think if the right job had come along, I probably would be an employee. And I have to say that surprisingly, there's something about working for yourself that, as challenging as it is, it's super liberating. Like, I wouldn't be doing this podcast if it wasn't for my business. And it's not because of the self-promotion. It's because when I'm working for a company and I'm an employee, I always felt this obligation to like keep my mouth shut. Like, I never wanted to have an opinion that was controversial. I never wanted to say anything that would reflect poorly on Cinesign or poorly on Technicolor. And so, you know, now that I'm accountable to no one but myself, like, I've got a Substack, I've got this, I've got so many outlets where I'm sort of commenting, and I
feel like you have to now, though. That has become the norm as well. If you want to be relevant, you have to be have an opinion, which is like, I don't know. But okay, so let's circle back a little bit. So you're losing your job, you might lose your job, whatever. So you take the time to grieve, get your money right, self-reflection. I think the next thing, and this is I've learned the hard way, is you need to take care of your health. Plus, it's an opportunity. You probably, if you've been working hard, you probably neglected it.
Yeah.
And for your own mental state, as someone who has experienced burnout, the first thing you need to do is sleep and exercise, right? Because it'll help. It's like so stupid and so simple, but it will help everything.
It does, yeah.
Yeah. So you've got to do that, and it's going to be like hard, and you're going to have like, this day sucks and whatever. I don't want to get out of bed, all that kind of stuff. It's going to happen, and that's okay. You should expect that. That's all part of the grieving process, and it'll come out of the blue. But if you take care of that, to me, that's like what I've learned is like you do that. And also you need to sort of take the good things out of it. Weirdly, like, so when I was unemployed and my daughter, like, I spent more time with my infant daughter than I would ever have had an opportunity to. And so to me, in some ways, it was a terrible financial situation.
Yeah.
And in hindsight, it was probably one of the best life situations.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So you got to take those kind of health wins.
Sure.
And then you've got to set some goals. So I always find there's a honeymoon phase, like maybe it's a dark honeymoon phase when you
leave. I can't remember getting let go from Mr. X because they amalgamated Mr. X into the mill and I was redundant. It was no big deal. But I remember coming off the adrenaline high of running shows.
Yeah.
And I went into like a adrenaline deficit. Like it's crazy where like your body just shuts down. And oh my God, like it took me a long time to like
recover. I had that problem just while I was working. I was like, when I do a show, I completely go into the show. And, you know, like
when you think about it, we're insane, right? Like,
yes.
What other industry does is like, you know, we always joke about, oh, we're not curing cancer, but God, does it ever feel like it sometimes? And like the patient's going to die on the bed. But man, it's insane how much pressure we put on ourselves.
Especially when I became, like, when I started to do VFX supervision more, I felt like producing was is a different stress, but it's once it's working, then it's kind of maintaining it. And you're not necessarily if you're working with good people and you've got a good structure and you've got a good rhythm and flow, it will work itself out. But when you're responsible for that and the creative of it, it's a different. It's a different kind of pressure. And in some cases, I was doing both jobs, that's even stupid.
Yeah.
So
then, like PTSD now.
Yeah. It's a bit of that. So I would, my thing about everything, I'm like so as far as self-reflection goes, I am a careful thinker. I don't commit to things that drives people crazy. I like will, I'll look at the argument. I'll think about it. I like to think about things. But once I decide, I know that I am 100% committed and psycho insane and intense.
Right.
And
I've seen that. Yeah.
Yes. And I've had to like adjust this because I realized not everyone is at the same intensity level. And you sort of, you know, as you go through your career, you go, okay, you got to calm it down a little bit. But especially when I was ambitious and in my early, late 20s, I was a very intense person. And, you know, coming down off a project, like you say, is one thing. Coming down off a job is the same thing. So it's not only are you like, oh, I don't have a job anymore, but you're like, you're combining that with the kind of like, I need to do something. So one of my things that I do, and it's a little bit superstitious, like I do the honeymoon, the dark honeymoon phase. I go through this stuff. I make my resume, make 1,000 resumes. I send out jobs. And within like 2 or 3 weeks or maybe a month, I'm like, either you've got another job, great. Or no one contacted you back. Mm-hmm. And then at that point, I have to take a step back and go, okay, I can't send out a million resumes every time. This isn't going to work. It's so much time and energy, and it's can be a waste. So if you're getting a lot of response from it and stuff, that's fine. I have got jobs from applying for jobs, and I've got jobs from knowing people and having connections. So I've done both. But then to me, it's like, okay, that initial burst, like I didn't get anything out of that burst. So I have to like now thread it down. So I'll do it consistently, like one day a week.
Yeah.
But then I have to go and do something, or I'm going to drive my wife crazy, my children crazy, myself crazy. So almost.
Yeah. There's got to be an outlet of some kind. And
yeah.
And some structure to get your ass off the couch or out of bed. Like, it's too easy to like kind of wallow if you're not careful.
So that's that's why we're doing this. Cause it started with me going, talk to someone every day. Are you, and I know you're available.
That's right.
You're right.
This is our active therapy. You get to witness it live.
If there was
all eight of you,
if we live closer and we get a coffee, we would have done that. But
yeah,
it was, you know, so that was part of it. But then also then I started going down, I tend to go down rabbit holes where it's like, okay, well, this business is interesting. Or like I looked up franchising and, and all this kind of different things. And it's not necessarily that any of those are bad, but they clearly weren't like within a month.
Yeah.
So to me, that was the first thing is what's within a month of coming to fruition. And I should focus on that first. And once you kind of go through that list of things, then you kind of have to go down to maintenance. Because now it's going to, in my experience, now it's going to be a while.
Well, it's funny because, like, you know, the fallacy we have is we have 24 hours a day and we're selling time. And the goal is to try not to sell time, but to sell, you know, the passive income thing. But, like, I've been, like, looking for different ways. So I've got one client who wants me on-prem to help them, which has been good and stable, but like draining as hell because it feels like a real job. And I'm just like, oh my God, I don't want to do this for the rest of my life. And then I have like a couple of my software or VFX clients. They're like amazing. I'm helping them pair up with supervisors and producers. Yeah. I've got a company that I work with in VFX that does lead panels. So if you're shooting in volume, they have like the best LED panels on them. So it's good. I've got my fingers in all this VFX stuff, but I've also, I'm a professional dungeon master in D&D. I get paid to do D&D a couple times a week. Yeah, I know, totally. But like, you know, hey, you know, it's $60 an hour in the end.
Yeah.
Works out.
Why not?
Okay. And then I've got the side hustles. Like I was disparaging the side hustles because I think like there's this fetishization again about the grind, but I've got some courses I've been selling. I tried to use AI to find the future Google websites to sort of buy the websites cheap and sell it. And I've tried all kinds of crap just to like.
Yes, you've tried a lot.
I'll speak for myself. My sort of desperation level was getting higher. I was trying more and more exotic things, but the things that actually resulted in paying the bills were doing actual traditional work for people that value it. So,
But it's like the creative process. You have to go through, I think. You have to go through, this is kind of what I'm getting at. You have to go through this kind of like, and then, oh, that seems interesting. And then, but the trick is, I think everyone, so like, I have every couple of weeks, I'm like, okay, what did I do this week? And is it working? And often, like, I wouldn't count it.
Yeah.
And then I tell my wife, well, this is what I did. I did this, I did this, I did this. Most of the time in bed on my phone. And I felt like, ah, I'm not getting out of bed or whatever. And this is kind of what led me to say, hey, let's have a meeting. So I have to actually get downstairs and onto the computer.
Yeah. And that's actually, you whatever, poo-poo it. But like, it was accountability for each of us. Like, we were kind of keeping each other accountable. Like, you're not sitting on your ass, are you? Like, what are you working on? What's your strategy? We talked about business ideas and about
tools
that we were going to buy. And,
and to be honest, like, you know, talking to someone who has similar interests and skill sets is a massive thing. So, like,
don't despair. Like, keep that as an option.
I think reach out.
Too often we suffer in silence because it's embarrassing. Or I think Chris has helped me, and hopefully I've helped Chris too. Like, just humanize the experience that what we're going through isn't unique to us, and like, you know.
And this is why we wanted to do this, because we thought, maybe it helps somebody else.
100%.
Yeah. So
and then we got flagged for our AI logo.
Well, you know, whatever. At least people are talking about us.
Yeah.
So that's a huge thing. Is like, once you get your own shit together, you need to start to reach out, and then you need to do something. This is my kind of feeling. I got to the point where I'm like, I can't look up or watch any more YouTube videos about AI businesses or boring business, whatever. I'm gonna go nuts. My default, living in an old house, is I make a project. And then, superstitiously, every time I start a big project, someone calls me for a job. Now, it doesn't always happen.
Yeah.
But it happens enough. And then even if it's not, I'm like, so right now I started like revamping my shed. My shed, I've been neglecting it. It's like a giant garagey shed. And I am redoing the floor, which is ridiculous, and it's hurting me in every possible way. So it's helping with the muscles and health thing as well. But when Dineg was winding up, I like made shelves and I made like storage units and stuff. And it's the same approach I took when I was stressed. I need a project that is so absorbing that I do not think about other things. But the momentum of doing things and accomplishing things is so important to keep your rhythm going. I think that is the key thing. So then I come in from the shed, I edit the podcast, I post it. Like, I don't dilly-dally in that because it feels like I'm working.
Yeah.
So to me, that's
give yourself purpose, like whether it's fixing your shed or baking bread, or like gardening. Having a value outcome is positive.
I've found, like, this is an old man thing to say, but but gardening,
we are old men.
Yes. Wait a second. Take it easy. Gardening has been something that I find really weirdly satisfying, because usually I can do it in one day or like an afternoon. I can make something and it's clearly done and better in that time period. So when I've had the most stressful projects, that's often something I would do, or hobby things or whatever. But that kind of thing is like enough to trick yourself into saying, okay, I did something today. And, you know, like, if you're doing your own renovation, not everyone should be doing their own renovations if you're not capable of that or don't have the interest of doing that. But do something. Like, go volunteer. Go do You're not doing anything anyways.
You bring up a good point. Volunteering is super important. Like, I just started volunteering And like one of the great things about this business is you meet some pretty fascinating people. And so I met a gentleman who was a one-time OPP officer. He's now retired, but he's running a nonprofit that's helping the Canadian government, you know, prepare to protect its critical infrastructure. And because we worked together in the past, he's like, help me write this paper. And I had like zero background.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I collaborated with a friend of mine that he paired me up with. And we wrote this paper, and it's now been presented to the public service, and they might actually change some policies. And it's like, I got that news today that they're actually going to give it to, we have to present it to public safety. And like, it came in, I had a shit day at work, and it like kind of made up for it, if you will.
Yeah.
And again, it's just sort of getting out of your comfort zone. I have a lot of imposter syndrome, like, where I'm like, what do I know about this topic? Like, I don't think I'm alone in that. I think a lot of people underestimate their abilities.
Yeah.
And it's thanks to Perry, who's this friend of mine, who convinced me to sort of go outside my comfort zone, and it's totally paid off. So
yeah, like I did a thing where like I decided, because I could financially, I'm like, I'm gonna try I played soccer for a long time and it was starting to hurt too much, but I wanted to do something, and so I started taking kendo. And for me, one of the appeals of it was, which is, if you don't know, it's like a Japanese martial arts, like samurai sword fighting. One of the appeals of it was I knew it would be hard.
Yeah.
I knew it would be more than once a week. And I knew that it would be like, it's a thing where it's a lot of discipline and focus.
Yeah.
So to me, it was like, it's something. And I started to go to, like, I also have nerdy hobbies. I go to a game. So I started to go to those more.
Yeah, you're more nerdy than I am.
Wait a second. Take it easy. But basically, it's like, you've got to, you know, there's going to be probably guilt about not getting the thing you want. Like, I didn't get a job today, or I didn't, you know, that kind of thing. You've got to give yourself, they don't have to cost anything. You've got to give yourself enough grace and something
positive break, yeah,
to do that you feel like, okay, well, this was something that is still, my life is still, you know, good. And it's,
yeah,
it's so important. And then the other thing, the last thing I'll say, so that's my strategy. And so far I have not gotten a job, but I don't assume I will get a job in the next little while, and I can handle that.
You gotta wait till the World Cup's over anyway, so you're not really looking now, are you?
This is true. I mean, I would take a job now, and we would work it out. So don't, you know, hire Chris. Hire Chris.
So employers out there, yeah, Chris is available.
Chris is available. we'll talk the details after, but yeah. So I'm not. I'm lucky enough to not be in a rush because I think I've been in this situation before and I've prepared for it.
Yeah.
And so if you are in this situation now, and this is the first time, you need to remember what this feels like.
Yeah.
Because if you actually learn the lesson, and when you get your next job, you should immediately start to plan for when you're not going to have your next job.
Yeah.
And if you do that, you will have so much more freedom and flexibility. And I call it FU money. And so
yeah,
when I did my financial plan, it's number two on the list, FU money, because I don't want to have to, if I can avoid it, and I'm not quite completely there. But if
I'm gonna rob a bank?
No, I'm not gonna rob a bank. That's too risky. but I'm not going to, I don't want to be in a position where I have to work somewhere I don't want to work. I don't want to be in a position where if I make a mistake or something goes wrong, then
yeah,
my family members are affected.
And paying the price, yeah.
And I want my, you know, like right now my stress is more, it's more about like my wants than my needs.
Right. That's good.
And that's where you want to be. So
yeah,
you may not be in that position right now. And I've been in positions where I haven't been in that position. And I was like, basically, this will never happen again. That when I had the house, the money was dwindling, we'd cut everything. We knew we would be okay, but I'm like, I'm never having this happen again.
And yeah, all it takes is one lean Christmas and you're like, never again.
Yeah. That was 18 years ago. And I was like, fucking never. Good for you. Never fucking again. So sometimes you got to learn these lessons the hard way. And again, if you are struggling, and I'm sorry to hear that, but you need to take care of yourself and your needs first, and then kind of build up to that. And I think, you know, like I said, like,
yeah, if you're really struggling, find me on LinkedIn, because I'll talk to anybody. Like,
yeah,
I feel like at some point in this process, I hit rock bottom and managed to come out of it. And I'm happy to talk anybody through it, because it's totally doable.
Well, I'm in a pretty good position, and I still had some days where I was like, this is the worst. Like, many days.
Yeah.
Where I'm like,
yeah.
I don't know what.
And I advise, like, don't listen to the news, because the news is designed to make you panic and stress. And there's nothing but shit on it anyway right now. So ignore it. Find puppy dogs or something on YouTube. Yeah. No more Gulf of Tonkin or Strait of Hormuz or whatever the hell. Like, just, you know, do yourself a favor of not doubling down on your personal stress by adding global existential shit on top.
What makes this, like, different, in my opinion, is that, and this is why I think, why we're both thinking you have to shift harder, or or not necessarily. I'll tell you something. If I get a job soon, regardless of what it is, it will probably be maybe permanent, maybe contract. But when someone says permanent, it's like, what does that mean to you? Nothing is permanent. That's ridiculous. So you know, those days are gone when somebody works 30 years at one job. I mean, it still happens occasionally, but that's kind of a fallacy. But even if I got a job that's like, say, a feature film that lasted a year, I'll still be back in this position again in a year.
Yeah.
So and as you get older, you're like, well, I don't have many more working years left. So do I want to be complete?
If I could cut it to 5, I'd be happy, but it's looking more like a decade.
You know what I mean? But do you want to be, to be completely screwed with 5 years to go?
No.
Or do you want to be starting to prepare, you know?
Yeah. Now? And like, you know, the one thing we can say right now is the economy is terrible, but the stock market's rocking. So like, if you could have a piece of that success that's going on, you know, have the discipline to invest and get a financial advisor and stuff. In the long term, you're way better off for sure.
Yeah. And the thing about, well, and this is, maybe we'll end it on this, is like, the thing about financial independence is it does not come quickly.
Yeah.
So this is why it's important to be thinking about it as soon as you can. And it's difficult. We work in a very, well, whether if you're working in the industry or you're not working in the industry, you're very distracted either way. And so you kind of have to, this is why I think it's important to sort of make sure you take the time to handle your own business first. And it's, I say that, yeah. And I have moments of clarity, and I have moments where I've been completely negligent as well. But if you have more moments of clarity than negligence, you'll probably be okay.
Yeah, look out for you. Look out for your family. Look out for your friends. They're the people that really matter in your life and can keep you going.
You can't rely on companies, and even the best intentioned owners and companies, like, they can't they can't guarantee it themselves. So
yeah, and I would say, of all the companies I've ever worked for, Cineside had the best intentions. They really wanted the best for everybody. It just became unachievable as the economy deteriorated, the VFX and entertainment economy. So to Chris's point, even a really good company with a really good leadership stack can't always guarantee bliss.
Yeah. So hopefully that's been of use. I mean, if you have ideas or comments, please share them, because I'm sure other people would benefit from them as well. What are you doing to cope with either your current underemployment or the, you know, there's a lot of worry about AI and the future of the industry and the health of the industry. And, you know, even the people that are working are probably thinking about, you know, how long is this going to last? And that's, I think, a healthy thing.
And we're looking at doing perhaps a little spinoff series of shorter clips with people who have made it over the wall, people who have transitioned out of visual effects, see if there's any patterns, see what kind of opportunities are there. Because it can be done, and we know some people who have done it successfully and are happier for it. So if that interests you, let us know in the comments, and we'll put together a list of people who can maybe serve as a model.
Yeah, so good luck out there to all of you. And we'll probably talk about things related to this. And I think the next one we're going to do is a little bit more. I'm basically thinking of the advice I normally give people who ask.
And, it sounds good.
And my strategy is not for everyone. And I'm sure there's different strategies, but hopefully it would be of interest. I know there's a lot of people that sort of do it, and it works out. So, and having been in a position of not knowing when your next week's pay is going to be, like, you, it changes your mentality, and that's how I started in the business. So I don't sort of take for granted any money, and I also assume I'm going to lose my job all the time, which is a weird negative way to live, but it's served me well. And maybe you don't want to live that way, but you could probably take a few tips from there. But anyways, that's this episode of the VFX Existential Crisis Podcast, which got a little existential.
Yeah, well, more existential than some of the other ones.
And yeah,
we barely mentioned AI, which is a nice plus.
Yes, I really tried not to this time, since we really talked about it last time.
Yeah.
But I'm sure we will again, because the robots persist.
Yes.
Resistance is futile. Okay, well, so anyways, like, subscribe, do all that stuff. And we will see you on the next one. See you later.
Bye.